to offer you this lesson from Unity of the Keys Spiritual Center.
Well, as always, it's good to be back here among you people of Unity of the Keys, the visitors, the regular attendees, and the large spiritual community that reaches out from this moment into this community and beyond this community to all the Keys, out into the state, the nation, and the world. What we ignite here, what we fire up here, is not just about us, but about all that spreading out into the world. If you ever wonder what it takes to change the world, it just takes you. I want to share three vignettes with you this morning, and then take those vignettes to a different place. The first one, you picture yourself, you're sitting in your office cubicle. I know, that sounds like torture. But you're sitting in an office cubicle. I'm not sure there are that many here in Key West, except maybe over at City Hall. But you're in that cubicle, and you've just gotten back from lunch. And you're satisfied, and you're full, and you're happy. And a coworker walks in with this plate of something and says, "You gotta taste this. This is the greatest thing I've ever eaten in my life." And you say, "But I've just eaten." "No matter, you've gotta eat this. It's better than what you had for lunch. It's better than the best meal you ever tasted. But I'm allergic to some things." "It doesn't matter. Just eat it. Because it has been so good for me, it's got to be good for you." Second scene. We're at the United Nations. It's not everyone in the room, but only the democracies of the world. We've got France and Germany, England, over on the side is a little Scottish empire going on. You got the United States, and we got Canada. Yeah. And we've got India, the world's largest democracy, and we've got so many of them. And Iceland, the world's oldest democracy. And one by one, the representatives of these democracies come up to the podium. "It is my great honor to stand before the democracies of the world," they say, in various languages and various accents. "It's an honor to stand before the democracies of the world. But I need to tell you, our democracy is better than yours. Some of you still have queens and kings. We do without that. Some of you have unicameral legislature. We have two. Somebody else says, we've got three." And so it goes. In a world in which there are so many yearning to feel that their voices make a difference, in a world which there are so many who do not want to be oppressed, who don't want to be just dictated to, there's so many who do not want to be the pawns of the oligarchs, the dream of democracy is so rich, so enticing, that we should only be able to move to that democratic spirit where everyone is honored, where the voices of each are equal and accounted. But in this scene, the democracies are vying for who will be number one democracy. Will it be a group of patriots? Will it be a great massing of eagles? I'm sorry, I had to do that. But there's a fighting. There's a fighting going on in a room that should be united for who is better than whom about democracy. If you think it's far-fetched, just listen to some of the debates going on in the worldwide political realm. Third scene takes me back to some of my railroad roots, which you ask about. And this is not directly related to what I did. I was a railroad engineer for some summers, and that's another story. But it's the experience I have when I travel on Amtrak, especially long-distance trains. You've got your little tiny cubicle that you're hiding away in because you're no longer going to do coach overnight. And at mealtimes, you're brought into the dining car, and as I'm usually traveling by myself, they say, "Juan, yep, sit here," and then they seat three strangers with you. So you got a table of four, And maybe one of them is some kind of couple together, or maybe it's just three individuals who have never met each other. And my usual experience has been this. Somebody at that table wants to sell me something. Now, I'm not talking about Amway. They want to sell me something about an approach to life, a way in which to think about how they exist, how they have been down in the valley of the shadow of death, and now they're up on the high points, and they just know that what's experienced for them is the experience I need to have for myself. They couch it in many different world religious terms, but it basically says is, what I have found, what I have personally found and validated as meaningful, I want you to find as meaningful. It makes for a very uncomfortable meal often. Unless somebody bravely says, well, tell me, why do you think we need to do what you've done? And then you get the long story about what has happened, the losses, the gains, the trials, the tribulations, the release, the resurrection of their own personal spirit. And then they stop selling. Once they touch back to what their experience has been, what their questioning has been, what their doubting has been, once they get back into the core of what got them to where they are now, they somehow no longer need to share with you with such vehemence how you ought to be just like them. Because in fact, they ultimately don't want you to be just like them because they didn't like being themselves in that process at times. But they jump ahead to tell you what the outcome was. In each of those scenarios, there is a competitive spirit going on. This food is the best food you've ever eaten, bar none. Our democracy is better than your democracy. My spiritual answers in life are better than any others you have ever heard of. I want to suggest we have a different path to follow. And it's what I call non-competitive spirituality. Here's what I find in life these days when I talk to people. When I talk to the people who are at the table with me on Amtrak but are silent, in fact, they're usually looking with shocked faces like, I start asking them about their lives. I ask them what's meaningful to them. I don't tell them what's meaningful to me. I ask them what's meaningful to them. And here's the sad and almost scary part. What used to be about 10%, and now I would say is about 25% of the people, when I ask them those questions, say to me, I don't see much connection to anything other than my own life. I feel disconnected. I have no relationship to anything larger. I'm just trying to get through the day, day after day after day. I rise up and hope I'll still be alive at the end of the day. I go to sleep and hope I'll wake up. And so it goes on and on and on. Henry David Thoreau wrote years ago about most people living lives of quiet desperation. I think there's a lot of that going on right now in our world. People for whom there are no major structures of meaning and understanding. All they know is they got to feed themselves, clothe themselves, house themselves. And the housing is a little tough if you're living in Key West. And that's the best they can do. They see the world through lenses of scarcity. They see the world through lenses of limitation. They see the world through themselves and themselves only. I think that's sad. I think it's tragic that people living in a world of such possibility and potential, living especially as we do in this society with so many opportunities, but all people living with the abundance of existence, should ever feel that somehow they are separated from meaning, isolated in their own lives, disconnected from anything larger than themselves. In other words, about 25% of the people I meet have no spirituality. Because I define spirituality as having a sense of connection to something larger than yourself. You may call it spirit, you may call it life, you may call it existence, but some sense that it's not just about this one single frame of being, but about something larger, something more compelling than just getting through the day. But there is the sad reality, and there are probably some in this room right now who can identify with feeling that some of the time, or remember when they did feel that. What to do? What to do with all those so-called lost souls who are just living out there disconnected? I'll tell you what I think doesn't work. I don't think competitive anything, especially competitive spirituality, does anything good. For example, within that model of all the democracies debating who's got the greater democracy, the better democracy, the more meaningful democracy, none of that discussion of competitive democracy in any way helps other countries that are not democratic move to be democratic. Nothing that is trying to be sold to you because it served the need of somebody else is going to actually serve you, because it will always be about the seller and not about the possessor. We have this role. Each of us in this room who have been touched with an understanding of spirituality, who know that each day in various ways we reach out and find connection beyond self, we have a role. Not to say we have found the way, but to recognize there are so many people out there struggling to find meaning and connection in their lives. And it seems to me that if you're wondering what to do when you meet someone who has no spiritual connection whatsoever, is not to tell them about yours. Don't tell them all about what saved you from the depths of loneliness. Don't begin with answers. Begin with questions. Begin asking them about themselves. Begin asking about what they're feeling. Begin by asking them how they feel about their lives. And then you can probe further. People love to tell the stories of their lives. And if you don't shut them up, if you don't cut them off, if you don't somehow go into the judgment mode, if you don't somehow get to the place where it's, okay, I don't want to hear any more of that, but you let them speak, which is a rarity in this world, that people are allowed to speak their own truth without judgment. If you let them do that, they will begin to spin out stories that will break your heart and challenge your soul and show you the depth of what is possible in the human condition and still to be alive and whole and attempting to make it each day. And the more you open up those questions, not rushing to say, I've got the answer for you, but let's explore more all about your life, they will begin to show little glimpses, little snatches of, well, the other day I saw the sunset and I stopped for a moment and looked at it. What made you stop? What did you see when you looked at it? How did it make you feel? And then they'll begin sharing their story once more. I stopped because, I don't know, I just felt like I had to. And how did you feel? Somehow I felt connected to this whole thing that's going on. I can't even put words to it. Good, don't put words to it. Just spin out that story. And don't try to think you have to have it all perfect and right and figured out. There are people called theologians who do that work, and they're irrelevant to almost all of life. You don't have to have a framework. You don't have to have names that go to it. What you need to have is a capacity to listen to the stories of those who are wandering this earth, seeking something more than mere existence, and not having found it yet, just would love to have someone to be a companion on that journey. I was thinking as I was preparing this sermon about the Masons, you know, the Masonic order. They will never come and sell themselves to you. A Mason will only respond what Masonry is about when someone asks them. I'm going to suggest that that's a good model for non-competitive spirituality. You ask their story. You ask their feelings. You ask their thoughts. You ask their inner being until such time as they turn around and say something like, "So, what do you think?" And then you owe them your story. And you owe them your understandings. Not because it's absolutely right for everyone, but because it's the thing that motivates you. But more than the story you will tell them, it will be the life you live that will tell them that something's going on in your life that they wish they had in theirs. You can tell them all about this reading or that book or this song, but really it's going to be the glimpse of you being fully alive, challenged with all the problems of being human and alive, but somehow being whole because of what you've caught as your spiritual understanding will make the difference. You don't have to sell it. You have to be it. One of the great theological works of the modern times is the Rocky Horror Picture Show. And in there, you know, don't dream it, be it. Don't dream it, be it. Don't hold it as an abstraction. Don't hold it as a set of answers. Just be it. The world is too full of systems of thoughts and answers fighting each other for the allegiance and understanding of what it means to be human, when in fact what we really need to see is the majority of people, 75% I would say by my estimate, are already out there with some understanding, and if they would just live it, if they would just be it, if they would just express it, if they would just show it, the other 25% who are wandering this earth, wondering if there's any meaning at all, would begin to see it, not because those others were better, but in fact because they were exactly the same. So I commend to each of you non-competitive spirituality. Fill your hearts with questioning. Fill your hearts with empathy. Fill your hearts with the capacity when you meet someone who has not found the path that takes them to meaning, learn not to show them the path, but to offer to be a guide till they find their own path. Learn how to companion and walk with others while they are still adrift. In the end, my vision, my dream, I suspect it's yours as well, is that every person on this earth will find a path to travel that will be something more meaningful than themselves. Something larger of understanding than single lifetime go-around. And if all did it in their own way and all had meaning and didn't feel empty, the world would be a better place. Don't compete for the understandings. Love toward common understanding of the human condition. Blessed be. Amen.